You ready?
Ready?
Watch out, Frankfurt!
Anyway,
with a friend.
Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Welcome, everybody, to the third podcast in as many nights for the Missy AE podcast, brought to you by Jim Early and the Whispers groups, that being Sports Whispers, Survivor Whispers, Big Brother Whispers, all of our Whispers groups, which you can check out at Facebook. We have a lot to cover tonight. We have, of course, coming off of a little break week last week. I was out of town attending the New England Revolution game against Orlando City. Orlando City, which New England ended up winning 2-1. Pretty good game. Let's see. We got Lou joining us as always. Yeah. Good evening, Lou.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, Lou. You know, Lou. I figure we should probably start off with Major League Soccer because the reason why we didn't have a show last week was because I was at the New England Revolution game at Gillette Stadium.
I forgot how that turned out.
It was 2-1 final score for the New England Revolution over Orlando City. And Orlando City, actually, it's weird. They're saying that the game-winning goal was basically scored on an own goal by Orlando City, which,
oops.
Honestly, I was sitting there. That's flat-out bullshit. I'll tell you one thing. Adam Buxa should have gotten credit for both of New England's goals that night. But for some reason, they decided to credit the goal going off of their own goaltender, which didn't make sense at all from somebody who was actually there watching the game live. And coincidentally, with the win, not only did they clinch a spot in, I think, because I believe the first seed automatically advances to the semifinals, I think, for the MLS Cup. And not only did they clinch the semifinal spot there with, I mean, their league-leading 63rd point. Or no, they get 3 points, so it was 62 points at the time. Of course, they beat Montreal on Wednesday. So now they have 65 points. Not only did they clinch presumably the top spot in all of Major League Soccer, because the next closest team is the Seattle Sounders over in the Western Conference, but also they clinched a spot, I believe, in the CONCACAF League, which basically there are 4 to 6 spots, I think, that are reserved for Major League Soccer teams. And because I know they have one spot for whoever is the league leader in wins. Or in points, I should say, the league leader in points. They have a spot reserved for the Eastern Conference winners, a spot for the Western Conference winners, and a spot for the MLS. Well, actually, you know, then again, maybe it is only 4 spots, because there is also a spot for the MLS Cup winner. And obviously, if New England happens to win the MLS Cup, then that spot will end up going to the runner-up for the MLS Cup. But, you know, I mean, looking around the league, Lou, there is no other team that has 20 wins like the New England Revolution currently do. I mean, the next closest team is Seattle with 15, Kansas City with 14, Colorado with 13, and Portland with 13. Otherwise, the Eastern Conference has pretty much been dominated by New England this entire season. I know teams around you, Lou, New York City FC, they are currently in the playoff. They're currently in the playoff picture from what it looks like. 11-6-10, which is weird because the way they do the records in soccer is they have the draws come before the losses. So it's 11 wins, 6 draws,
and 10
losses.
That's kind of weird when you think about it.
It is, yeah. They do have at least one New York team that will be going to the playoffs.
NYFC.
Yeah, the New York Red Bulls, unfortunately, it looks like they are probably eliminated because they're 8-7-11 right now, currently sitting 11th among all Eastern Conference teams. So they're likely out.
That's ugly.
Yeah, it's and let me tell you, I have a couple of friends that are Red Bull fans. They're not happy. They're not happy at all this year.
No.
Over in the Western Conference, I mean, the way that it looks right now, it looks like your Western Conference playoff teams, you'll have Seattle at the top. So they will advance to the semifinals for the Western Conference automatically. You'll have Kansas City, Colorado, Portland and Salt Lake, the LA Galaxy, it looks like they will qualify, as will Minnesota, and Vancouver currently holds that final spot, I believe. Or, wait a minute, is it? Oh, you know what? I should probably ask my friend, because I forget if it's 8 or 9 spots that qualify. I want to say it's 8, though.
I think 8.
Yeah, I want to say it's 8, but because the first seeds automatically advance, it could be 9.
Yeah.
Because you have to have an even amount of teams in the first round. So
it has
might
to be
potentially
8.
Be 9.
But 9 is not even.
No, but what I mean is in the first round, because, you know, the first seeded teams automatically advance.
Okay.
So, you know, since they automatically advance, that would obviously mean that, you know, obviously everybody else would have to compete unless they do it in round robin style. I don't know exactly how they do the playoffs in particular, but New England pretty much clinched the supporters' shield as well, I believe. Which, if I look that up real quick here, I'm pretty sure. Just looking at, yeah, it's an annual award given to the team with the best regular season record. Yeah, so that's probably they have probably clinched it at this point. However,
yeah.
New England is the only team so far that has clinched a playoff spot, which is kind of surprising. Let me see, actually, because, oh, wait, no, that's completely different. I'm looking at the World Cup standings. Okay, so the playoff bracket. The first overall. Yeah, okay, this is how it goes. So it will be the first seed automatically gets a bye. So actually there are 7 teams. It's not 8, it's 7.
Oh, 7.
Yeah, they will have three games or 3 series for each conference. The number 4 seed faces off against number 5, number 3 against number 6, and number 2 against number 7. The number 1 seed in the semifinals. You see, this is what I don't get, though. Because wouldn't you think that if you're the number 1 seed, kind of like what they do in the NBA, if you're the number 1 seed and you advance, you would face off against the lowest seed remaining.
Right, of course.
But that's not how they do it here. How they're doing it here is the number 1 seed will face off against whoever wins between the 4th and 5th seeds. and
it's weird.
The winner of 3 versus 6 will face off against 2 versus 7. This doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
No, it doesn't.
So look, and obviously it's the same for the Western Conference as well. So from what it looks like right now, it looks like it's going to be Seattle and New England getting the first round, buys. So with that being said, looking at the top 7 teams, that means that virtue of their loss to New England, Orlando City would be out of the playoff picture, as they are currently sitting in the 8th seed, which is obviously out of the top 7. Now, as far as the Western Conference goes, Vancouver is currently on the outside, with Minnesota taking up that last spot. However, though, Major League Soccer is good and all, but that isn't the big topic that's going on in New England. The big story going around New England this week is the return of Tom Brady for the first time in 2 years since he ended up leaving New England for Tampa Bay. And the big kind of a problem here with Tampa Bay, though, is, everybody is expecting it's probably going to be a blowout, which, I guess
I don't know.
There's a possibility it still might be. You don't think so, Lou?
With Gronk out, maybe not.
Yeah, that's a key thing as well. There's no Gronk. They don't have Giovanni Bernard. They don't have Jason Pierre-Paul. He's officially been listed as out as well. They did say that Richard Sherman will play. However,
good old Dick.
Don't expect Richard Sherman to be in any type of any type of playing conditions when you think about it, because unless he has really been keeping himself in shape this off season, and keep in mind he was only signed this week. He didn't even go through training camp and everything, but they did say that he will dress for tomorrow's game. However, they didn't say if he would play.
Oh, right. There was a difference.
And when you consider all of the injuries that they're dealing with, they did lose Jamel Dean, I believe, to a knee injury last week. Rob Gronkowski, obviously, the rumor is he has five broken ribs that he suffered in last week's game. Yeah, and it's possible he may be sidelined for quite a bit, but that's what the latest rumor going around was, that it was five broken, fractured, kind of the same thing.
That's still, I didn't think it was that many. Five.
Yeah. There is something kind of concerning, though. Ndamukong Suh reportedly did not practice this week, which, obviously it would be good news for the Patriots, but it could be bad news for Buccaneer fans, who are expecting one of their top defensive tackles to get to Mac Jones this week. It says, but according to the NFL's latest injury report, he reportedly did not practice at all this week.
Where that?
As did Giovanni Bernard, also didn't practice. Obviously, he's been dealing with a knee injury. Jason Pierre-Paul was limited, but reportedly he is out for tomorrow's game, as he did not make the trip with the team.
Mm-hmm.
Carlton Davis, though, had full participation. So did Jaden Mickens. as well as Chris Godwin and Steve McClendon. So that's good news, especially on Godwin's part. One of the big weapons that that Tom Brady has on his arsenal. And also reportedly Antonio Brown will be activated officially for this game. So he will have Antonio Brown back. However, New England, they suffered a serious injury of their own, and this one is for the season. As James White, the running, their prized running back, is officially done for the year with a hip subluxation, as it was described. It's basically the same injury Ryan Fitzpatrick is dealing with right now. But obviously, it's much tougher for a running back, considering, you know, they use their hips a lot more than quarterbacks do when it when it comes to the run game. So originally, you know, the outlook for James White was going to be, oh, maybe he'll miss a couple of games. Now it's expected that he will miss the entire rest of the season, including any potential playoff appearance. So that
now we got a problem.
Yeah, that right there is a huge loss for New England because, yeah, they have Damian Harris as their top running back, but the big problem is who they have behind him. You take away James White, now you got J.J. Taylor, Brandon Bolden, who did not look good at all last week against the Saints. And you also have the rookie, Ramondre Stevenson, who's been benched ever since he fumbled during week one.
Mm.
Now, J.J. Taylor, obviously, you know, when he came into the game last week, he provided a bit of a boost for the run game, but still, you know, against a very tough New Orleans defense, that the run game was kind of stifled a little bit, as was the pass game entirely, as Mac Jones was pressured quite a bit. He did not get the necessary throws that he wanted off, and actually he was picked three times last week. Although, to be fair, you could almost say that only one of them was his fault, because one of them was a direct bullet pass. The other two, he was heavily pressured due to the fact that apparently the offensive line cannot protect him worth a shit last week. But good news for Mac is it looks like Trent Brown will officially be returning for tomorrow night's game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Hmm.
After missing the last couple of weeks with an undisclosed injury. Now, you know, Lou, let me ask you a question. Obviously, you know, with Tom Brady and the Buccaneers, obviously people were expecting the Buccaneers to at least get out to a 2-1 record. That was expected.
Yeah.
People were expecting New England to at least be 2-1 in the first 3 weeks, which, you know, maybe they would lose the New Orleans game, but everybody was expecting them to beat the Jets, which obviously they did, and everybody was expecting them to beat Miami, but they lost by a slim margin, a 1-point deficit.
Mm.
How much blame early on this season would you put? Who do you think should receive most of the blame for New England's early struggles at the start of the season this year? Because they've had very limited offense.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, they've had opportunities on defense and they've squandered them. I mean, there's also been a couple of plays that have been called. There's been a couple of plays that have been called that have made fans wonder, McDaniels, what the fuck are you doing when it comes to, you know, giving up? Like for example, one of New England's drives, they passed it all the way down the field every single play. And then once they get to the 10-yard line, they decide to run it. it's
I'll
I mean,
say one
it's
thing
just
about
little
that.
Plays like
what?
That. Yeah, it's like little play calls like that that have kind of stifled New England's offense this so far early on this season. Now, here's the question, though. Who do you put most of the blame on? Do you put it on the offensive line? Do you put it on the receivers themselves? Do you put it on the rookie Mac Jones? Or do you put it on the offensive coordinator?
I'm looking mistakes I think we can let go. We can rule that out. I mean, a lot of rookies make a lot of mistakes. So we have. So I'm willing to cut Mac Jones a little bit of slack here. But I think it's your offense line, your offensive line that's screwing up.
Yeah, I mean, this. You know, the offensive line should be if people remember, the offensive line of New England was at one point obviously, with when Brady was under center, was one of the
once
top offensive
time.
Lines in the game. Yeah, once upon a time, obviously. You know, was one of the top offensive lines in the game. And a lot of that had to do with the offensive line work of Dante Scarnecchia, who was the legendary offensive line coach for so many years for New England.
Right.
And it kind of seems like once Scarnecchia left, or I shouldn't say left, he retired. Once he retired again, it seems like New England's offensive line is nowhere near the animal that it once was. So, I mean, there were so many times in the first three games this year that Mac Jones has gotten absolutely destroyed on some opportunities. And it's caused Mac to, you know, to take a lot of short pass attempts instead of clearing out the field like he was able to do in Alabama. So, you know, I kind of agree with you, Lou. I kind of think that partially, you know, their offensive struggles could be attributed to the fact that the offensive line has just not been able to, you know, to withstand any amounts of pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have receivers like Nelson Agholor, who was the number one receiver for Vegas.
Yeah.
You got Kendrick Bourne, who was one of the top receivers for San Francisco. And, I mean, they'll have N'Keal Harry returning this week. Maybe perhaps N'Keal Harry can revive his connection that he had with Mac Jones during the preseason. But, you know, you also had Hunter Henry as well, who put up numbers in L.A. You had Jonnu Smith, who was one of the top tight ends in the league last year, and even he's been left pretty much stymied early on this season.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I believe he was responsible for one of the picks last week because he couldn't catch the damn ball.
Dumbass.
You know, a lot of that has to do with the pressure, because the offensive line has not been able to hold the line to give Mac Jones time to get the ball off, and to give the receivers time, you know, to get open. So, you know, I agree with you, Lou. I do think the offensive line is one of the one of the biggest problems that New England has had so far this season.
Mm.
Now, I'm kind of
interested. Well, they're not
though.
The same team as they once were when they had Brady and the Gronk and Aaron together and a few others. This is not the same Patriots team. So I'm not surprised that, you know, it's coming this way. I knew once they were gone, I was going to be, you know, a shitload of the Patriots offense. I knew they were going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, because Newton, he didn't do crap for anybody, and, you know, and the coach is like, sorry, you got to go. You're not like your predecessor. You're out of here, you piece of shit. Sorry, Cam, you got to go.
No. Yeah, but when you
Belichick
think of it too,
perfection.
But when you think of it too, a lot of their struggles on offense as well could potentially have to do with poor drafting. Because when you think about it, Belichick had the opportunity to draft DK Metcalf in the year that Metcalf went, And instead, he decided to go with N'Keal Harry, which, I mean, obviously, so far in his career has proven to be an absolute bust of a draft pick.
Mm.
So, you know, there's been very poor choices in the first round in recent years by Belichick that has maybe led people to believe, you know, maybe that is part of the problem, is the fact that, you know, they just can't draft well. I mean, you know, Belichick is praying that, oh, because we got so much value for Brady, you know, with the with him being a sixth round pick and he turned out to be the greatest quarterback of all time, you know, maybe we can search for value and we can find more people like that. But it's a rare occasion, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to find gems like Brady every single year. So I think just the fact that they haven't been able to draft well in the first round. I mean, obviously there have been other later round picks that have actually turned out pretty well, but you know, the first round is where the cream of the crop pretty much is.
Right. Yes.
Or the first couple of rounds, at least. Now,
yes.
You know, I will say, you know, he drafted Sony Michel, and Sony Michel at first, you know, was well worth the pick. I mean, he was one of the more dynamic runners and is one of the more dynamic running backs in his rookie year, especially during the playoffs. Isaiah Wynn got injured. And for some reason, you know, he was drafted, I believe, as a tackle, but for some reason they've been using him he was drafted as a guard, I think, and they've been using him at tackle for some reason. You know, it's just, for some reason, the draft has kind of played a role, I think, in the de-evolution of New England's roster. Because they probably felt that they would be able to sustain that level of success that they've had for so many years under Brady, and Belichick has tried, or is trying still, so hard to prove that, oh, it wasn't Brady that made this team, it was me that made this team, when really, with every single game that passes, pretty much almost confirmed that it was basically Brady that made this team as successful as they were all these years.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just don't know. You know, with the loss to the Rams last week, I just have this feel. I have this feeling that Brady is—he just has a sour taste in his mouth, and especially with how he left New England and how they treated him later on in the dwindling days of his Patriots career. I just have this feeling that Brady is going to try to run up the score tomorrow night.
Oh yeah, he'll try, but I don't know if he'll succeed.
I mean, obviously, one of the New England is probably going to deploy man on man, or no, not man on man, zone coverage. Probably, because that's one of the key things that Brady struggled against the most is when the field was always covered. So they're probably going to try and limit Brady to potentially running the ball almost the entire game, I guess. Which, I mean, I don't know. With how New England's defense got picked apart by New Orleans last week, I just have a bad feeling all around that this is going to be a potential. You know, if Mac Jones isn't able to capitalize on this this depleted defense of Tampa, I just have a bad feeling that this is going to be a pretty big blowout.
Hard.
I mean, you know, it's it does help a little bit that Tampa Bay is missing quite a few pieces, and the fact that their defense is actually ranked 25th in the league, while New England's surprisingly is ranked 5th. So, you know, I guess maybe perhaps also as well, you know, Tampa Bay so far hasn't really had much of a run game. And,
no.
You know, one of the things I've noticed as well is all of the early money, no surprise here, all of the early money has gone on Tampa Bay. And with such a lopsided, betting, it kind of makes you wonder if perhaps the league may try to skew the calls a little bit tomorrow night. But, anyways, by the way, Lou, you have done really, really well in the games gridiron for Whispers. You are actually in a three-way tie for first place right now. But based off of alphabetical order, though, you are ranked third on the leaderboard. You are tied with two others with 17 points total. And actually, so far this week, I think you have two wins, I believe, so far. You're 2-1 right now with Georgia covering the spread and Michigan covering the spread. Well, Michigan won outright anyway, so they covered regardless, but your only loss right now is the Hurricanes back on Thursday night. So
I'm going to take the Rutgers Ohio State game because I knew how that was going to turn out to be.
Well, it turned out to be a cover for Ohio State. So,
well, I mean, it was obvious. I mean, Rutgers against Ohio State, you can't even compare the two. I mean, you know, when you look at that, I mean, Ohio State made Rutgers look like a Pee Wee League team. Ugh.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at some of the spreads when the spreads were first put out there, and you know, there were a few that seemed appetizing. Now, obviously, of course, I wasn't expecting Georgia to absolutely steamroll Arkansas earlier today.
Neither
like
was
they
I.
did. I thought that maybe perhaps, you know, Arkansas would be able to get some offense out there, but for some reason they got shut out big time, 37-0 today by Georgia. And let's see, there was that game. I had a feeling that Texas, the Longhorns, that they would be able to cover against TCU, which luckily they did, but TCU also covered because they were given 5 points, while Texas, basically it was a 5-point spread, essentially. So I had a feeling, though, that Texas would be able to cover, which they ended up doing, luckily. We did, however, have a huge upset with a last-second touchdown forcing overtime by Stanford against the number 3 ranked Oregon Ducks.
Quack, quack.
Earlier today. And Stanford then scored in overtime, and Oregon, I don't know what the hell happened, but they ended up fumbling their own ball on third down, ended up losing, I think it was like a yard or something, and then on fourth down, they weren't able to get anybody open. And that was probably the biggest upset that we've seen so far, that we saw so far today. Now, obviously, I haven't updated the other scores yet, but games that are currently in progress, LSU with a 7-point lead right now over Auburn. We do have Boston College tied Clemson Very interesting.
Ah.
You know what? Let's talk about that for a second. How big of a collapse has this been for Clemson? The fact that, you know, they were once top ranked university, you know, a multiple national championship winner, and now all of a sudden, you know, once they lose Trevor Lawrence, I mean, they had quarterback after quarterback after quarterback. They were almost like Alabama when it came to production. But now, all of a sudden, they're struggling to even produce, period, with DJ Ulagalele as their quarterback. And actually, they just had a punt blocked by BC, so BC is now starting on Clemson's 35-yard line. It looks like we're going to get potentially another score here. What are your thoughts, Lou? Why do you think Clemson has gone from basically being a top university, you know, with one of the top universities that has kind of like Alabama, where they get the recruits and everything, to now all of a sudden, you know, they're pretty much in obscurity at this point, or pretty damn close
Well, I guess we could say the same thing about, you know, Nebraska. I mean, once upon a time, McAdams, they were the cream of the crop, but look at them now. Now they fall off a cliff. I guess they couldn't get any good draft picks. And then I guess, you know, now, well, I mean, recruits from high school. So maybe the same effect is now happening to Clemson. I mean, Clemson not long ago were, like, I think, national champions. And now they can't even draw flies. So I think maybe they're having the same effect. They can't recruit anybody to go out, you know, high school or maybe, you know, junior college and whatnot. You got to learn how to – I guess the guys, you know, they forgot how to recruit better.
Yeah, it's so strange with how with just how poorly Clemson has played so far this year. You know, it's almost like, I mean, they've dropped all the way to the number 25 seed, to number 25 out of all the top 25. And from what it looks like, if they continue playing the way they are, you know, we'll probably be looking at Clemson outside, you know, unranked. Which, you know, if you were to ask a college football fan, you know, so many years ago, nobody would ever think that Clemson would be unranked.
Neither would I. But as you all tell you, what comes up must come down, and eventually, and apparently, for Clemson, it has.
Yeah, it's just so weird with how things have turned out, because, you know, this is, like I said, this was a highly coveted school to go to for, you know, for their football program once they developed it into a national championship winner. And I find it so funny that Dabo Swinney is complaining about not getting calls when they were barely leading Boston College by only one score.
Yeah, but Sweeney's an ego problem.
Yeah. You know, I kind of have to wonder, was the loss of Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne really
that big? It could be a factor. I'm not saying it is, but it could have been.
I mean, if that's the case, Clemson, they got a long way from ever going back to contention for a potential college football playoff.
But
I mean,
think
it may be a while at this point. Yeah, you can't rule it out, but at the same time, you know, considering how they've played this year, and from what it looks like with how the momentum is going. By the way, that was overturned, the punt. I guess apparently they must have gotten they must have ruled it a or no, they must have gotten an interception, I think, off of BC. But because Clemson has the ball back now. But, you know, it's definitely going to be a long time, I think, before we ever see Clemson back in the national football playoff. Just by,
I don't know if
we could
look that far down the road. I don't think it's going to be too long. Maybe just a one year thing. I mean, that's happened on college teams before. You know, they're down 1 year, they come back the next. I don't think it's going to be too long before we see them back in, you know, the real form. Maybe just put me an off year.
Well, hopefully, if you're a fan of Clemson, you better hope that there's a. You know, that this was just a one-year thing. By the way, we did have another big upset as the number 10 Florida Gators fell to unranked Kentucky 20-13.
Uh-huh.
As Kentucky now improves to 5-0, 3-0 inside the SEC. So that's the second major upset that we've gotten so far today. And the Florida, you know, Florida is one of those other schools that, hell, you know, they had much better success last year with Kyle Trask.
Yes.
As opposed to,
as opposed to
who they currently have now, Emory Jones.
Mm-hmm.
We did also see the Notre Dame Fighting Irish fall to the Cincinnati Bearcats 24-13, which
Cincinnati's tough.
Yeah, no, that's not a surprise to me at all either. Cincinnati, for the first time this year, they actually look like a legitimate threat potentially.
Yeah.
With how they're continuing to win game after game after game with such high production, because this was considering their last couple of games, this was kind of low production for them, only 24 points. But
okay,
Notre Dame though, their first loss of the season, they fall to 4-1. Probably they might fall out of the top 10 potentially. Depending on what they see for rankings. I think maybe Ohio State may climb back into the top 10 potentially.
I would think so.
Michigan with a big win over Wisconsin, 38-17 earlier today. They're 5-0.
Uh-huh.
Coastal Carolina is 5-0 with a 59-6 thrashing of UL Monroe.
You went wrong. What kind of a school is that?
I have no idea. I guess maybe they're in Louisiana. I don't know.
I know, but they're such a crappy team.
Yeah. Well, now they're 2-2. But yeah, you know, they're not one of those teams that everybody is known for paying attention to.
No, far from it.
You know, one of the other big teams that has really surfaced this year is the Iowa Hawkeyes.
Yeah.
Improving to 5-0 last night with a 51-14 demolishing of Maryland. Talia Tungavailoa picked off Tua's little brother times last night by Iowa. Easily the worst game in his college career thus far.
Uh-huh.
And BYU with a 34-20 victory over Utah State. They stay undefeated at 5-0. BYU, you know, that's another team to potentially look at as well. I believe they are.
Just like Notre Dame.
I don't think they are listed. Let me see real quick. Yeah, because they have They have home and away. They don't have like Big Ten or SEC next to their record.
Okay.
So I guess they're probably independent, yeah. But a 34-20 victory. Tyler Allgaier had the big game for BYU last night. 3 touchdowns, 218 yards on 22 carries. So BYU, that's another potential team to look at there moving up. Alabama, they stay undefeated, 42-21 over Ole Miss today.
I got a question about Alabama. Do you think that there's something more with their defense a little bit, or is it just me?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's been Alabama defenses in the past that have given up, you know, that have made games kind of close.
Right.
In
okay. So it's
years.
Not just me. Thank God.
No, it's. But honestly, this kind of looks like an Alabama defense.
Yeah,
you know,
because, you know, they gave up only – when they lost to Florida, that was only 2 points. And everybody's like, ah, oh, they're going to beat the pants off. Oh, really? I didn't think so.
Yeah, no.
I knew something was going on. They all doubted me anyway. So I'm wondering, you know, is their defense, you know, suffering a bit? And can one of the top four teams or top five teams – you know, in the conference, you know, beat him before the season's over.
Maybe, you know, I could see Georgia as a possibility with how they've been.
I was thinking that too.
With how they've been rolling, rolling so far this year. I mean, they dispatched 8th-ranked Arkansas like it was nothing today. So I still can't understand how Oklahoma is ranked 6th. When they've just barely gotten by with all their wins, winning against Kansas State also today, 37-31. You know, I just don't understand how they're even ranked number 6. But you know, I think there are a couple teams that could potentially give Alabama some problems. You know, I don't know if Penn State possibly would. Considering,
maybe. I think Georgia mostly.
Yeah, I would say if I were a betting man, I would probably put money on Georgia as being the toughest matchup for Alabama this year. Because usually they are. Usually they're the toughest matchup every year that Alabama has. So, and actually, you know what? Let me look. Let me see. When do they face off against Alabama? They have, let's see, next week they have Auburn, then Kentucky. Do they not? Wow, they don't face Alabama this year.
Oh, come on. There goes the great game of the year then.
So the first time that they would, the only time that they would face Alabama is maybe in the SEC title game.
Mm. Well, we got a good game of the week next week, anywho.
But I mean, you take a look at Georgia though. They Clemson 10-3 in the first week. They beat UAB in the second week, thrashing. Which I mean, that doesn't really matter anyways. They thrashed South Carolina 40-13. They shut out Vanderbilt, and they shut out Arkansas this past week. Or earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the toughest matchups, honestly, you know, they kind of have an easy schedule now that I look at it, because they face 22nd-ranked Auburn next week, although depending on what happens today, you know, maybe Auburn may not even be ranked potentially. They face off against Kentucky the week after. They face off against 10th-ranked Florida at the end of the month, October 30th. Then the 6th, they face Missouri. November 13th, they face Tennessee. And then they wrap up their year against Charleston Southern and Georgia Tech. So, honestly, it's not really that tough of a schedule for Georgia this year.
Depends who you ask.
I mean, maybe Auburn, Kentucky, and Florida may give them some problems, but, you know, I'm not really I'm just looking at this schedule, and I think it's a very big possibility that Georgia could finish undefeated. As long as they don't run into any problems, you know, for injuries and whatnot this year. Some other games that are currently ongoing. Mississippi State is currently on upset alert, leading Texas A&M 24-19, though Texas A&M is currently in the red zone at the Mississippi State 18-yard line, so that's something to keep an eye on. Let's see. Oklahoma State barely leading Baylor 17-14 with about 6.5 minutes to go in that game. Penn State with a 14-0 lead over Indiana with I think they just started the second half. Michigan State over Western Kentucky currently 42-16. Boston College and Clemson are tied at 13 apiece. LSU just increased their lead over Auburn to 10-0. And let me see if there are any other notable games here to mention. Iowa State currently demolishing Kansas 52-7. Vanderbilt with a slight lead over UConn. That's not much of a surprise, if anything.
No.
Nebraska, like you mentioned earlier, Nebraska currently thrashing Northwestern 49-7. And the Ragin' Cajuns of Louisiana with a 20-6 lead over unbeaten South Alabama. And one of the later starting games, currently Washington and Oregon State are tied at 7 apiece. So, not really. Actually, let me take a look at the remaining spreads and let me see if there are games that I'm missing here, because I believe we still have Fresno State that still has to play tonight. Let's see. We still have UCLA play against Arizona State. We got Fresno State at Hawaii. We have there's not really any other big games to keep an eye on for the most part. But, going back to the NFL for a second here, what the hell happened between Cincinnati and Jacksonville? You know, a 7.5-point spread, and I guarantee you nobody thought that the game would turn out as close as it did with a last second field goal improving Cincinnati to 3-1 on the year with a 24-21 victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, now Jacksonville is the second longest losing streak in NFL history. And I'll tell you, Urban Meyer made it great as a college coach, but oh boy, since he went to the NFL, oh boy, it sucked.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of wondering. You know how we reported 2 weeks ago that maybe potentially his heart may not be all in it this year.
Yep.
I'm kind of wondering if maybe perhaps that report is true, because
maybe.
You know, this is very unusual that we're seeing out of Urban Meyer. The fact that usually he has pretty good coached teams, and
sure,
Jacksonville, they've just laid a fucking goose egg so far this year.
Yeah.
And maybe part of it has to do with the fact that Trevor Lawrence is still getting adjusted to the NFL, but
maybe
I mean 200 204 yards this week. The only touchdown he had was a rushing touchdown.
Yeah.
Then again, we're sort of seeing the same thing from other rookie quarterbacks as well. You know, Justin Fields in his first two starts has struggled. He's going to be starting tomorrow as well.
Why?
I believe because Dalton is.
Well,
Dalton
yeah, I mean, figure
is,
it out. No, I'm just thinking, why would you want to do that? I mean, because you know they both suck, and you know that. Andy Dalton, you know, is crap.
Well, no, he's injured.
Yeah, but he's also crap.
Yeah, but, I mean, he is crap, but he has some sort of knee injury, I guess. So
yeah, I heard.
He is probably, they said he's doubtful to even play. So it looks like it's probably going to be Justin Fields that will be the starter, which... You know, he's been one of those guys that has had problems this year. I mean, granted, it is a rookie quarterback, but
yes,
you know, a lot of people have expected a lot out of these rookies this year. You know, Zach Wilson, he's off to an 0-3 start, but a lot of people think that could be just because he's a New York Jet that. You know, he's off to such a bad start. Down goes Florida officially from a note I just got here from one of the Games Gridiron hosts. 20-13 final, Kentucky over Florida.
Yep. Wait, 20-13, you say 23 or 20?
20-13.
Okay, that's what I have.
20.
That's what I have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm writing the scores down as we speak.
Yeah, here we go. Looking at Chicago last week, the Bears, for Justin Fields, he only completed 6 out of 20 passes for 68 yards. He had 3 rushes for 12 yards. So this is almost. This is basically they're only playing him because they're forced to play him because Andy Dalton's injured. Even though Andy Dalton is absolute shit, they would still play him over Justin Fields because it's clear as day right now that Fields just isn't ready for the pro game.
No, but it's like I say, pick your poison. Who would you rather take? Because Dalton is crap. So, and Fields, like, you know, another rookie, you know, making rookie mistakes. You know, they always try to give the rookies, you know, a little bit of slack. I mean, they're not used to it yet. I mean, nobody expects,
True.
You know, a rookie quarterback to, you know, take the team from worst to first in a year. That's not going to happen.
Yeah,
so,
no,
you know,
of course
that
not.
Would, great. I got
a
little
not.
Bit of
no,
slack.
Nobody is expecting a rookie to completely blaze through the league.
No.
You know, unlike Kyler Murray this year in his, second or third year, I think, in the league, and now all of a sudden he's led the Cardinals to a 3-0 record through 3 weeks so far. So
lucky him.
You know, he's one of those former rookies that's been on a blazing trail so far to start the season.
Yeah.
But, you know, Wilson has done probably the two best quarterbacks so far this year have been Wilson, despite his 0-3 record, and Mac Jones. Because, really, Mac's only bad game so far was against New Orleans last week. And... Wilson, even though he has had, even though, you know, his Jets are 0-3, he has, you know, it's not like he's been horrible. I mean, yeah, he has thrown picks this year, but part of it has to do with the fact that, you know, the Jets, they just have nothing to give him, you know. They have no defensive support, and... honestly, you know, they're just outmatched basically in every single rank. But let's see, who was one of the other ones? Trey Lance, you know, Trey Lance has been used sparingly for the 49ers, but for the most part, it's been Garoppolo's team this year.
Yes.
So then obviously there's Davis Mills of the Houston Texans, who has basically been forced into starting because of the injury to Tyrod Taylor. And last week, He did have one touchdown with, I believe it was a missed extra point attempt, but, you know, they fell to Carolina 24-9 last week. But taking a look at his stats currently this year, he had two touchdowns and one pick. He's been sacked 5 times. His completion so far, he's had a total of 27 out of 46 attempts. So he's 27 for 46 for 270 yards, averaging around 6 yards per throw, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick. You know, he's basically kind of on the same level as Mac Jones, except with less interceptions. So, you know, really the top two quarterbacks probably have been Zach Wilson and Mac Jones for the most part this year, as far as rookies go. I mean, Trevor Lawrence is up there too, but, you know, there's only so much that Trevor Lawrence can do with the team that he's currently dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he does have – actually, you know what? I should say Trevor Lawrence has actually been the best – the best quarterback statistic-wise, 5 touchdowns, 7 picks. The 7 picks is a big problem, but he probably has one of the worst quarterback ratings in the league, 36.8, which is ranked 28th of 32 quarterbacks. However, he is 12th ranked when it comes to passing yards, 873 passing yards. So I think as far as Lawrence's struggles go, it just has to do with the fact that he's a Jacksonville Jaguar.
Yeah.
That he's cursed to basically be on a team that sucks so badly, essentially. But, you know, one of the other troubling things early on this year has been the Kansas City Chiefs starting out with a 1-2 record. Very surprising when you think about the dominance that the Chiefs have had the past couple of years. I mean, in an AFC West that seems to be stacked now. I mean, you have the Raiders at 3-0, you have the Broncos at 3-0 behind Teddy Bridgewater, surprisingly. You have the Chargers at 2-1. Is it close to panic time for the Kansas City Chiefs, despite it being only 3 games?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't expect this. You know,
no,
actually, I didn't expect this. So I think there is room to. I think there is a bit of panic room here.
Yeah, especially with such an elite quarterback like Pat Mahomes. You know, they are actually they've given up more points than they've actually scored. They've scored 92
That's
points,
a good sign.
but they've given up 95 so far to open up the year. I mean, they're averaging around. Let me see if I have this right. They're averaging close to 33 points given up per game. I mean, that's very uncharacteristic of Kansas City.
Yeah.
You know, I'm almost wondering if Pat Mahomes is kind of following the same career trajectory that Russell Wilson started off with.
Huh.
You know, he started off
I don't like to compare players, but maybe that is
the case. I mean, when you think about it, Russell Wilson, he started off promising in his early Seattle Seahawks career.
Yes.
He won the Super Bowl in one of his first years in the league, and then he went to back-to-back Super Bowls, I should say. You know, one against the Broncos, then he lost against New England.
Right.
So, you know, I think there's definitely a potential cause for concern when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yes.
I mean, what do you think, Lou? Because they have probably one of the top offenses in the league still, but defense, man, it's just, I don't know. It's, you know, it's
a shit
kind
show.
It's kind of embarrassing for a team like Kansas City, who's been such a juggernaut the past couple of years, and now they find themselves at the bottom of the AFC West.
Yeah. Surprise whistle, isn't it, folks?
Oh, it definitely is. And actually,
yes.
You know, the AFC North, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers, they were atop of the AFC North last year, and now all of a sudden – we're back to Big Ben doesn't give a shit, and
now all of a sudden
the Cincinnati Bengals are at the top of the division, while the Pittsburgh Steelers are at the bottom.
They're still on top, just like the way it used to be.
And you know, with the way the AFC South looks right now, I have a feeling Tennessee may just run away with the AFC South once they stand their ground. Basically, you know, they're currently 2-1, but the Texans are 1-2. The Colts are winless. The Jaguars are winless.
Yeah.
The Colts are a mess to begin with, despite having
right.
Carson Wentz as their quarterback. The Colts are a mess. You know, it looks like the AFC South,
yeah,
the Titans may just run away with it.
Who would have thought?
And another big surprise this year so far has been the 3-0 start for Sam Darnold with the Carolina Panthers.
What a surprise. He sucks on the Jets and does well for this.
And plus, they won last week as well without Christian McCaffrey. So you got the Panthers, you got the Buccaneers, and you got the Saints all within striking range of each other in the NFC South so far. I mean, granted, keep
right.
in mind, everybody, it's only been three games, so, you know, maybe not much to overreact to here, but if you have a quarterback like Sam Darnold and you're saying that Sam Darnold is your quarterback, the way he played the last couple of years with the Jets, and you're starting off with a 3-0 record, I would kind of be concerned if I was other teams. You know, because Carolina, if you're going from Teddy Bridgewater to Sam Darnold, and you mean to tell me that Sam Darnold is a much better fit than Bridgewater was for your club?
Yeah.
I mean, that would kind of concern me if I was a fan of some of the other teams in the NFC South. I mean, obviously Tampa Bay is probably going to take over eventually, considering they do have the greatest of all time, leading their squad. So, and obviously the Saints, yeah, they have a 2-1 record, but honestly, I don't see Jameis Winston lasting the entire season with the way that he's he's been very calm so far when it comes to decision making, but I have a feeling sooner rather than later we'll probably see the old Jameis Winston at some point making reckless decisions. Also, it looks like the demise of Aaron Rodgers has been greatly exaggerated. The Packers are back on top of the NFC North with a 2-1 record, winning their last two games. And you know, there was such a panic. I remember there after the first week there being such a panic that, you know, Rodgers seemed like he was checked out of the game of football, that, you know, he was almost – we remember he had that huge feud in the offseason with the front office of the Green Bay Packers. You know, he doesn't like the general manager. Everybody thought that he might retire or he might sit out of the game of football this year. Ultimately, they convinced him to come back. All signs had pointed to Aaron Rodgers being basically mentally checked out of the game of football. And now all of a sudden, Green Bay has found themselves in the driver's seat. So, you know, it's clear that the reports of his demise have been greatly exaggerated. But, you know, Lou, what a turnaround for your Dallas Cowboys. You know,
so far, so good.
I think, if anything, this just shows how important Dak Prescott is to this team. The fact that the Cowboys are back on top 2-1 to start off the year. Ezekiel Elliott, he had a pretty good game last week as well. But I think it's abundantly clear that the MVP of the Cowboys is clearly Dak Prescott, because they're a much different team when he's officially healthy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what have you thought, Lou, so far about Dallas's start?
Best I've seen in a long time. With Dak back in the lineup, you know, that makes a big difference.
Yeah, and you know, like I told you to start off the after week one, there was the possibility that the Cowboys could go on a run.
Yeah.
With how their schedule looked. And I mean, you got the Panthers. Granted, Panthers are 3-0. The Cowboys, they don't have DeMarcus Lawrence, so they are a bit banged up. This will be a pretty good test, though, to see where the Cowboys are when it comes to facing tougher teams. You know, with better records. I mean, 3-0, 2-1, not really that much of a difference, but. You know, it's definitely this will probably be a big test, because Carolina has allowed an average of 14 points or fewer in each game this year. So now you're basically banking on possibly Dallas bucking that trend.
Yes.
That may provide big problems for Dallas if they're hoping to win this week to improve to 3-1.
Right.
Now there was history actually. There was history that was made last week, as Justin Tucker, not only did he make 4 of 5 field goals in their win over the Lions last week, but the final kick of the game was a record-setting 66-yard field goal that looked like it bounced off of the crossbar. It looked like it was going to fall back onto the field, but instead it fell the opposite way and went through the crossbar, or it went through the uprights for the win. An NFL record 66 yards. I guarantee you there is nobody that is probably going to be able to break that record.
No.
I mean, the previous record was what, 64, 63, I think?
63.
So, yeah, it's, I mean, that, you know, that was one hell of a finish for Baltimore last week. I was absolutely shocked to see, to see him kick that game winner as far as he did. And the thing is, this was an on the point 66-yard attempt. You know, there wasn't, oh, that kick could have been good from 70, that kick could have been good for 68, that kick could have been good for 70. No. There, if it was 1 yard further, that kick would have missed. That kick would have fallen short. So that makes it even more impressive.
I'll put it this way. DeCroix, Al Michaels, in that Monday Night game, he did what?
Yeah, it was just unbelievable. And there was all, you know, there was also another, I think it was last week for Jacksonville, when they returned a what they called a kick six, where they returned a missed field goal for a touchdown, and one of the announcers sounded like he was having a damn heart attack right as he was calling the whole play.
Wouldn't you?
I forget who it was, but it sounded like he was having a damn heart attack when Jamal Agnew returned the missed field goal all the way back for a kick six.
Maybe it was right to Chris Sims.
Yeah, maybe. We do have some sad news, though, in college football last week.
Oh, yeah.
A sophomore defensive back out of Utah, Aaron Lowe, was identified as a victim in a shooting early Saturday morning last week. The shooting had occurred. Oh, okay. The shooting had occurred the previous Sunday in Salt Lake City at a house party. But it took all the way until the very next Saturday for him to be officially identified as one of the victims. A second victim was also identified, and they were, at the time, in critical condition. I don't know what the status of that victim is since. However, Aaron Lowe was unfortunately shot and killed in the middle of his third season with Utah, and he had appeared in each of the team's first four games. He was also recently the recipient of the Ty Jordan Memorial Scholarship, it says, which was given in honor of the former Utah running back Ty Jordan, who was tragically shot and killed last year while at his home in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very tragic, especially at such a young age, too. You know, not even getting to perform in the NFL,
right?
And having his life cut so short. It's honestly, I don't know what else to say. Clemson is really lucky right now. An update here: they are really lucky that Boston College is tripping over themselves, as Clemson is holding currently a 3-point lead over Boston College, 16-13. So right now they are very, very lucky that Boston College just can't seem to get out of the way of their own selves. So some injury news in the NFL. DJ Chark of the Jacksonville Jaguars has been diagnosed with a broken left ankle that he suffered last week, and he is out in – or no, not last week, actually. This past Thursday night against Cincinnati, he suffered the broken ankle, and he is out indefinitely, basically the rest of the season, essentially. It's a brutal turn of events for him, considering he was in a contract year this year. And he didn't gel at all with the new with Urban Meyer, so it sounds like he may have possibly played his final game already in a Jaguars uniform. And he's not really going to be a particularly young first-time free agent either, so that could potentially impact what he might get on the open market, as he'll be 26 in next year. He'll be 26. However, though, they're pretty much left with Marvin Jones and Laviska Shenault as their top two receivers now, with DJ Chark officially out of action for the year. So a disaster already for Jacksonville has just gotten worse, essentially.
Yeah, unfortunately. Nothing of a Jacksonville fan, but you got to start from, you know, keep losing. They haven't won since the opening game of last year, and after that, the bottom just fell out.
Hey, it just means there's gonna be more number one picks for them.
We have seen
teams that have built their squads off of early draft picks. So
yeah.
You never know. You know, maybe perhaps one of these years Jacksonville will finally get it right, and they'll finally be back to being a team that can actually contend. It's kind of funny that the last time they were in contention was when Blake Bortles was their starter.
Oh, yeah.
Which,
anybody should come out of retirement.
I mean, now he's – I don't even think he's retired. I think he's a backup, but – I can't even remember with who, though. That's the problem.
Yeah.
He's been essentially out of the picture for so long. The Kansas City Chiefs, though, they will have one extra receiver this week, as Josh Gordon has officially been reinstated from his suspension because of marijuana. Obviously, now with marijuana officially being treated as not a performance enhancer by the NFL. So now... he has officially been reinstated, and he has signed with the Chiefs practice squad.
Big mistake.
Why? Why do you think that?
Look, I mean, he does it all the time. I mean, you know, they're too soft on him. I mean, he screws up all the time, but yet the league gives him more and more chances. It's his fifth, you know, suspension on drug use and whatnot, and sixth suspension overall. I mean, where's enough enough? I mean, there's got to be a point where you draw the line and say, okay, you're going to screw up again, we're going to kick you out, you're not going to be reinstated.
Yeah, well, keep in mind, all of those failed drug tests were because of marijuana, and marijuana at the time was treated as a performance enhancer.
Right.
Now, obviously, with marijuana no longer being considered a performance enhancer, it makes sense that he should be reinstated for something that was never even an enhancer to begin with.
Yeah.
You know? So
now it's legal.
Yeah, because now it's legal. You know, there's no reason why he should have to sit on the sidelines, essentially.
Yeah, and the thing, they've been trying to make marijuana legal since my generation.
But, you know, and the thing is, too, is that keep in mind the stance on marijuana has really loosened in recent memory,
yes,
too.
I know.
I mean, not, you know, all around the United States in general. Let's see, an update on A.J. Brown of the Tennessee Titans. He's been dealing with a hamstring injury, and he did not practice at all this week. He's considered to be week to week, as he left last week in the first quarter with the hamstring injury. So it looks like he will be out probably for tomorrow's matchup against the New York Jets.
Right.
Which will probably see a majority of the targets going towards Julio Jones, from what it looks like here. Just assuming, based off of how they've spread out the targets in recent weeks. And with him being week to week, you know, who knows how long he'll end up missing. Good news, though, Taylor Lewan, after suffering a injury in practice, or actually, no, not in practice, in warm-ups prior to last week's game, he officially practiced in full this week, so he should be good to go for the Tennessee Titans for their matchup against the New York Jets. The New Orleans Saints, they will lose left tackle Terron Armstead for several weeks, it says, after suffering an elbow injury against New England last week. The injury is not believed to be season-ending at this current time. However, he suffered the injury while taking a hit from Tony Jones, one of the running backs, who was also blocking on the play. He had left last week's game, and obviously he didn't return, just based off of the diagnosis. In return, James Hurst, who started 5 games last year for New Orleans, is likely going to be taking his role on the at the left tackle spot. Also, there was a little bit of a scare with the Kansas City Chiefs, as head coach Andy Reid reportedly had to be transported to a local hospital following their matchup against the Chargers last week. Reportedly, though, it was said that he had been suffering from dehydration following their home loss. But the good news is it sounds like Andy Reid is officially all well, so he should be back. He should be back on the sideline for the Chiefs tomorrow for their matchup. 49ers cornerback Josh Norman suffered a chest injury last Sunday night, and it is reported that he reportedly has 2 bruised lungs and tissue damage after he was taken to a nearby hospital after spitting up blood following being taken out of the Sunday night matchup. Says here that, I mean, he has been mostly used in a rotational role by the 49ers. However, he could miss tomorrow's game against the Seattle Seahawks, though. According to Ian Rappaport, Norman hopes to play tomorrow against or in their matchup. So something to potentially keep an eye on for you know, for fans of the San Francisco 49ers. Also bad news for the Jets, their young wide receiver Elijah Moore, he suffered a concussion last week against the Broncos. And actually, let me take a look at the – yeah, he didn't participate this week, so he must not be cleared from concussion protocol. And what also may be bad news as well is Marcus May, the Jets' starting safety, he did not participate as well with an ankle injury. So the Jets may be without Marcus May as well. They also did not have participation from wide receiver Jeff Smith either, as he's dealing with a concussion as well. So it looks like Corey Davis, I mean, it's obvious, you know, he's the number one receiver on that roster. So he will probably still receive a majority of the targets for tomorrow's matchup. You know, as I said earlier, New England, they are without James White after he suffered a hip subluxation last week, and he is out for the remainder of the season. That probably means that J.J. Taylor and Ramondre Stevenson will see increased playing time, especially with Stevenson being a rookie coming out of Oklahoma. He's been, obviously, like I said, he's been benched ever since he gave up a fumble in week one against the Miami Dolphins. So the running back situation in New England, that's something to keep an eye on. But it's even worse for New England because they're losing one of their offensive captains as well with this with this injury. Broncos wide receiver KJ Hamler has suffered a torn ACL, and he will miss the remainder of the season as he struggled with injuries through 2 years in the league so far. He missed three games as a rookie with a concussion and a hamstring issue, and now he will play only three games this year because of the torn ACL. So now, not only are they without Jerry Jeudy, now they're without KJ Hamler. That leaves Cortland Sutton as the unquestioned number one wide receiver, with Tim Patrick starting alongside him. So, I mean, granted, Patrick, you know, he posted 98 yards last week in catches. And Sutton, you know, he's probably – I mean, he's going to be a heavy producer anyway. So the Broncos should be able to recover despite losing both Jeudy and Hamler, though they will have to – you'll probably be seeing a lot of targets going Sutton's way, though.
Yeah.
Also, the Panthers, it's been reported that they have traded tight end Dan Arnold and a third-round draft pick to the Jaguars in exchange for cornerback C.J. Henderson. As Henderson has been on the trading block since August, and with Carolina losing J.C. Horn indefinitely to a foot injury, the Panthers decided to exchange offense for defense, bringing in C.J. Henderson while dealing Arnold to Jacksonville. But it's, you know, it's kind of weird, though, because the Jaguars, they lost James it kind of makes sense for a Jaguars perspective. They lost James O'Shaughnessy for a few weeks, and they've been starting Jacob Hollister last week against Arizona, and probably, I believe, this week as well, although Arnold may have played as well. But Arnold will probably slot right in as the number one tight end until O'Shaughnessy returns. But in three games with the Panthers, Arnold had seven catches for 84 yards this year. Now, rookie Tommy Tremble will be the pass catching tight end for Carolina after Arnold's departure here. Moving over to the NHL, obviously, you know, we have the preseason currently underway.
Yeah.
We have obviously teams looking to see what they're going to do in terms of, you know, who may potentially make the team, who may not.
Yeah.
One of the early, things though, Travis Zajac, he announced a one-day deal with the New Jersey Devils to announce his retirement. However, Zajac will stay with the organization in an on and off the ice player development consulting role, it says here. He will also work to grow the team's youth hockey initiatives as well. He suited up in over 1,000 games with New Jersey in his NHL career after they originally selected him 20th overall in the 2004 NHL draft. He had accumulated 203 goals and 552 points in 1,037 career NHL games. So, I mean, it's kind of obvious, you know, Zajac, his offense had really deteriorated in recent years. So it made sense that, you know, it's probably the end of the line for him, essentially.
It looks to be that way.
Yeah, and the holdout is officially over for Vancouver and their two young star players, Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes.
Yes.
As Peterson reportedly agreed to a 3-year deal worth around $22.05 million, so basically $7.35 million average annual value. And Hughes agreed to a 6-year deal worth about $47.1 million, which is about an average annual value of around $7.85 million per year. So they will officially report to training camp and participate in the preseason, obviously. Big news for Vancouver, you know, agreeing to deals with two of their young star players, which obviously, you know, they would have probably fetched a high price on the open market if they were, well, let's just put it this way. If the salary cap had been higher this year, they probably would have fetched a huge price on the open market.
Yeah.
This one, though, this one is kind of confusing to me. Elvis Merzlikins has signed a 5-year, $27 million contract extension to remain a member of the Columbus Blue Jackets. And the reason why I say this is, I mean, he is in the final year of his 2-year, $8 million contract.
Yeah.
And obviously he'll be signed with Columbus now through the 2026-2027 season. But the big problem here is last year he only had an 8-12-5 record with a 2.77 goals against average and a 91.6 save percentage. So I guess maybe that was a result of the fact that, you know, they just couldn't provide enough offense in front of them. But, you know, normally you would probably expect better stats to give a goaltender around $5 million per year.
Yes.
Then again, though, the Bruins did the exact same thing with Linus Ullmark, and you know, he hasn't been able to even stay on the ice. So, I mean, what are your thoughts, Lou? Do you think that this is kind of overpriced, or do you think that maybe perhaps Columbus just hasn't had enough offense to?
They really don't.
You know, to
they
to
really
get
have enough offense.
Wins.
Yeah, that's a problem. They don't really have the offense. They can't really stay competitive.
Because, I mean, when you look at the – obviously, for a goaltender, the two biggest stat lines that you want to look at is the goals against average and the save percentage. Now, goals against average, you know, 2.77. I mean, not bad, but also, you know, you could probably ask for a little better for goals against average. And 91.6 save percentage, that's pretty much around the league average anyway. So,
yeah.
So, you know, I guess, and also this clearly shows that he was used in a backup role as opposed to starting last year. So maybe perhaps, you know, if Columbus focuses on improving their offense, you know, maybe this contract will be worth it in the long run
right.
for Columbus to have a player like Elvis Merzlikins locked up like they are. But, you know, I just don't know. You know, 28 games, 8-12-5
yeah.
record, 2.77 goals against average and 91.6 save percentage. Those are pretty much the only two stats that really saved this deal, if anything.
Yeah.
The Maple Leafs, they have announced that they have agreed to a 2-year contract extension with head coach Sheldon Keefe as he was entering the final year of his current contract. So basically he'll be the head coach for 3 more seasons, including this season. He has posted a 62-29-12 record for the Maple Leafs since he became the head coach of the team. However, you know, I think there's definitely more problems that lie underneath with Toronto. The fact that they just can't, for some reason, they just cannot execute when it comes to the playoffs. You know, they're clearly a great team during the regular season, but once they hit the playoffs, it's almost as if they completely turn, they completely switch the off button. What are your thoughts, Lou? Why do you think Toronto has seemingly struggled in recent years? Once they reached the playoffs? I mean, I know last year they didn't have John Tavares because he got injured during early on in the playoffs, So he didn't have, they didn't have one of their top scorers in John Tavares for their entire playoff series. But
maybe that's what they're missing.
I mean, could it just be that it's been poorly timed injuries?
Well, I've always said injury was a key factor. I mean, you lose one good player, and that can really send you back. And I think, sometimes it's hard to recover from it. So, you know, the injuries may have played a big factor in it. Bro.
Yeah, it's entirely possible.
I do. I wouldn't doubt it.
Also, Kirill Kaprizov, he has reportedly signed a 5-year, $45 million contract extension with the Minnesota Wild. After only just one season worth of NHL experience. However, though, he's not your typical sophomore player, though. Because he excelled last year with 27 goals and 51 points in 55 games. And he was a star in the KHL before he even came over to North America. So he does technically have a lot of high-level hockey under his belt. Because in the KHL, you're basically playing with former NHL players.
That's the Russian League, right?
Yes, I believe. I believe it's the Russian League, yeah. So, you know, you're playing with – it's not like you're playing with other junior players. No,
no,
you're playing with men in the KHL.
Right.
So the fact that he was a star in the KHL before he even came over to North America to play in the NHL, he's not like other sophomore players in their second year. As it says here, he has the potential to be the Wild's offensive leader for years to come under this deal. And this deal will buy out the remaining restricted free agent years for Kaprizov in what would have been his first 2 years of UFA eligibility. So technically, he will be a free agent, I believe, this makes it to his 29th, his year 29 season, I think. Well, once he turns 29, he'll be a free agent for the first time. Because usually you lose restricted free agency at around 26 going on 27. So, yeah, I think, it doesn't matter anyways. If he continues to be a star for Minnesota, he'll probably be in Minnesota for the long-term future regardless. But, yeah, actually, you know what? Let me look up his KHL stats because I'm really interested right now with the Continental Hockey League, as they call themselves, being so heavily competitive. Let's see. Yeah, he played with Moscow, CSKA with Moscow in – wait a minute. Oh, is this right? Yeah, this must be right. Okay. In 97 games played in his final year in the KHL, he had 50 – or no. Wait, no, he was number 97. In 57 games played – he had 33 goals and 29 assists for 62 points. The previous year, he had 30 goals and 21 assists for 51 points. And the year before that, he had 15 goals and 25 assists for 40. I mean, regardless of of where and actually he started playing his he technically started playing in the KHL when he was in 2014. So let's see, he's 24 now. Wait, yeah, he's 24 now. So he would have been playing in. He would have been playing at the age of 17 in the KHL against men. And he's basically excelled in every season that he had played in the KHL. So, yeah, this contract is definitely well worth it, I believe, for the Minnesota Wild because he's going to be an offensive juggernaut for many years to come for the Wild. So, yeah, this is definitely, I believe, well worth it. Nolan Patrick, he has signed a 2-year contract with the Vegas Golden Knights for an average annual value of $1.2 million per year. He was acquired originally as part of a 3-team trade with Philadelphia and Nashville in mid-July. He produced 4 goals and 9 points last season with the Flyers. However, he has not lived up to expectations ever since he was selected second overall in the 2017 NHL draft, but maybe perhaps a change of scenery and going over to Vegas may help with that problem. Let's see, Kevin Hayes, he underwent abdominal surgery a couple weeks ago. He's expected to miss... Well, at this point, it's now 4 to 6 weeks because previously it was 6 to 8 weeks, which means he will miss all of training camp as well as the first month of the season for the Philadelphia Flyers. He had 12 goals and 31 points in 55 games last year, so there is now a significant hole in the Flyers' top six. But however, this now also means it creates a big opportunity for some of their younger players heading into training camp. We do have NBA news as well, as the Ben Simmons holdout now officially continues.
Yeah.
It was reported by Adrian Wojnarowski that Ben Simmons will not report for the opening of training camp, and he intends to, and this is a quote, he intends to never play another game for the franchise.
Right.
So he has been unhappy for months, and obviously this tweet from Wojnarowski, which is probably sent straight from Simmons and his agent Rich Paul, confirms the rumors that have been put out there and puts the Sixers in a very tough spot here. Now, here's the problem. Considering what they've been asking for Simmons, I mean, they've been asking around the price of what the Rockets got for James Harden, which was a shit ton of draft picks going along with a couple of young players. And I just don't see the Sixers getting that for Simmons. For a guy who's basically, he wants to be a facilitator before he is a scorer. And he's been pretty much a big anchor for the 76ers' offensive struggles in recent years. And that's why they weren't able to advance in the playoffs this year, was the fact that he was afraid to even make it to the free throw line. All right, what are your thoughts, Lou? Do you think that any team would even be interested in trading for Simmons at this point? You know, could it just be that maybe he isn't being properly utilized in the Phillies lineup?
No,
or not Phillies, in the 76ers lineup?
No, he's been unhappy since he's been there. He was all hype and everything. I never really thought he was a good player. I don't think any team is going to take a chance on him. I think he might be headed back to Australia.
Well, that would be one hell of a downgrade.
Say that
going from
top dollar in the NBA to playing in Australia.
Yeah. I don't see anybody really taking him, at least not now. I could be wrong, but I don't see it.
I mean, the only way that he's going to be traded to another team is if the price comes down significantly. Because I'm sorry, but with the price that was up there for James Harden, I mean, the Brooklyn Nets have gotten more out of James Harden for that price than they probably
right.
would get out of somebody like Ben Simmons. Because Harden can actually produce. Simmons, it's
yeah.
basically a wait-and-see approach, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sorry, yeah, it's just... I just don't see it with Simmons.
No.
You know, and if he continues, if obviously he can continue to be, he can continue to hold out. However, there's been a statement that's been put out that says he hasn't spoken with the team since a late August meeting when he communicated his desire to be traded to Sixers officials. And it's been noted by Wojnarowski that says that Simmons is clearly aware of the sanctions that are available to the organization to fine and suspend him, including withholding of salary. But so far, Simmons appears willing to carry out a plan of forcing his way to a new team, and the Sixers have yet to find a trade that they're willing to make in order to deal him. You know, at this point, it just doesn't make sense for any team to even go after him, period. Unless
no.
that unless that astronomical asking price goes down, which I don't see them doing that.
Neither do I.
And it says here that he was due a $8.25 million salary installment yesterday, and the Sixers reportedly did not pay him that salary that he was due, as due to the fact that he's a holdout, essentially. And also, he made his decision with full awareness of the financial repercussions. So presumably, the Sixers' decision to withhold huge amounts of cash won't sway Simmons from his position, from his current position. And also, it says, as well, according to Shams Charania of The Athletic, that 76ers players wanted to travel to L.A. in order to meet with Simmons in hopes of convincing him to return to Philly, but they were informed that Simmons did not want to meet at all. I mean, this group of players would have included Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, Matisse Thybulle, and most of the team were set to take a jet out to see Simmons before they got
yeah.
turned away. And it basically says here that it's been noted that Simmons has mentally checked out as a member of the 76ers. And although there is no deal that has yet been made, teams are still calling to try and search out a deal.
Yeah.
And also, since we're talking about money, the NBA is reportedly aiming for a new TV deal that will be worth around $75 billion. Yes, you read that. You heard that
wow.
right. $75
billion,
which would result in a large increase in the salary cap.
Obviously.
However, it says here the deal wouldn't start until 2025, so it's not effective anywhere close to immediately. However,
right.
this also means that we could see, if this does go down, we could see some ridiculous contracts agreed to
yeah.
in the years to come. Because, I mean, $75 billion, you know, when you split that amongst teams, I mean,
yeah.
what, how many teams are there in the league? 30?
30? Yeah.
I mean, that comes around an average of about close to $1 billion per team.
Right.
You know, that's going to be a gigantic increase in the salary cap, which, you know, we see some astronomical, we could see some astronomical contracts be handed out. Like, for example, if Jason Tatum, if he ends up evolving himself into one of the top players in the league, like say a top five player, you could potentially see this. You could potentially see him asking for much more than what he got in his current extension with the Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that, you know, this deal would also likely dissuade players from signing long-term contracts before 2025. And it is possible that a $300 million contract would not be out of the realm of possibility.
You did say $300 million, correct?
$300 million.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
That's basically a baseball contract.
The 21st century has gone nuts.
Yeah. You know, it's, I mean, especially with all of the, you know, all of the outcry that has gone on in recent years, obviously with the NBA, you know, with the whole Black Lives Matter movement and everything, and how NBA players have been wanting to have a stage, you know, to make their statements and everything about the about the issue of Black Lives Matter and everything.
Right.
And just to think they're getting paid, they could potentially be getting a pay increase on top of all this. It's just insane. You know, some of the deals we could potentially see, especially with these new, with these younger players starting to come into the league. I mean, imagine what, if Trae Young continues to improve at the rate he's going right now, imagine what kind of contract he could have in the next 5 years. Once he officially reaches his peak.
Yeah. I don't know what to say.
Or say, I don't know, Zion Williamson, you know, finds his way out of New Orleans and actually goes somewhere where he can be, you know, a legitimate threat. And he ends up becoming the player that everybody thinks he's going to be. You know, just think about how much money he could be potentially worth in a couple of years.
Yeah.
I mean, a $75 billion contract, I just cannot see that. Or, I mean, a TV deal, not an actual player contract. But, you know, a $300 million contract, we only see that in baseball and potentially football. If we're talking about players like Pat Mahomes.
Okay, we got another final that just came in.
What do we have?
Penn State blanks Indiana 24-0.
Oh, shit. Wow, so Penn State, obviously, they're currently at, what, number four?
Number four. Probably going to go to number three in the polls tomorrow.
Yeah, probably, with Oregon dropping today, they're probably headed for the number three spot, because obviously one and two are all locked up. We do have another final. Clemson hangs on 19-13 over Boston College. Yeah. I'm kind of surprised, you know, with Clemson.
You are.
This was the Trevor Lawrence Clemson Tigers. You would be expecting a lot bigger win.
Oh yeah, sure.
Than the 6-point win.
Yeah.
So I just don't. Oh, my God. And, you know, UConn, it looked like UConn was about to have their first win in 2 years.
Whoa.
However, Vanderbilt, they officially beat UConn 30-28 on a last-second field goal.
Ball.
Yeah, so it's – I mean, that doesn't really matter anyways, but still.
No, it both sucks when you face it.
Ooh, we do have a big upset alert. Mississippi State
oh, yeah.
defeats Texas A&M 26-22.
Yep.
Texas A&M was ranked 15 before this loss.
It's like, gee, I guess I forgot to tell you.
So who knows what they're going to potentially fall to now, but now Texas A&M is 3-2. And we do have some other games that are underway. Michigan State is hanging on to a 17-point lead over Western Kentucky, 48-31. That's about 4.5 minutes to go. At the half, we have LSU over 22nd-ranked Auburn, 13-10. This game is about four minutes and 11 seconds left in the first quarter. UCLA and Arizona State tied at 3. This game just getting underway. Fresno State, yes, 3 apiece.
Okay.
A field goal and a field goal. That's literally all we've seen out of UCLA and Arizona State so far.
Yeah, it'll pick up later, I'm sure.
I would hope at least.
I got to move to the West Coast. I mean, these games that go on this late in this time zone, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. And that,
or
by the way,
to
is
Hawaii.
On FS1. Yeah, that by the way, is on FS1.
Right.
The Fresno State game is on CBS Sports Network. Fresno State and Hawaii just beginning. So they – actually, I think Fresno State started off with the ball. So they're yeah, they pretty much just kicked off, I think.
Yeah, you're able to get those games, right?
I believe so, yes. Let me double check.
Okay.
Because I currently had the Auburn game on, but...
But who's your provider?
Oh, Xfinity.
Uh-oh. Well, luckily you don't live in the New York area.
Yeah. No, luckily I don't, because I have heard their...
You heard
people on multiple occasions.
They dropped the MSG channels on the Comcast in the New York area.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, we haven't had MSG over here at all.
You're a little bit further out, but
you know, they used to have the YES Network, for example.
Uh huh.
They used to have the YES Network, and then they dropped it for some reason. I believe they had MSG at one point, too.
I also see how they can get out in your area, though. I mean, you're a little out of our region.
Yeah, I know. But they also service Connecticut, too, I think, which Connecticut, you know, there's a lot of New York
depends
fans
on where
living
you
in
are.
Connecticut, so... True.
If you're in,
I think
if you're in southern Connecticut, no. If you're like in the Bridgeport, New Haven area, yeah, most likely.
Yeah.
Connecticut goes
but,
both ways.
Like literally the only time I've ever had MSG or YES Network was when I had DirecTV. That was literally the only time I believe I ever had it.
Well, I get Nessa on mine.
Yeah, you probably have Messen Plus as well. That usually goes along with it. No?
No, because I'm not. No, I just have the national brand of Messen on Verizon, but they do not do Verizon Plus.
Oh,
I mean, they
okay.
Do, they
that's
don't...
interesting.
No,
that's,
because
that's
it's out of our area.
Oh, I see. Okay, so
yeah,
they must only do Nesson Plus for the New England area. So the New England state,
yeah, which makes a lot of, which makes
be
sense
to
be honest.
Yeah, obviously.
Because what we want with it, I mean, we're not Bruins and Celtics fans anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, obviously. Although Celtics are covered by NBC Sports Boston, anyways. But yeah, you know, Red Sox and Bruins,
Nesson.
You know, they go whenever they're playing at the same time. That's when they use Nesson Plus.
Nesson, right.
To switch between the two.
Right.
And it looks like we are about to have a score potentially with UCLA. UCLA is currently at Arizona State's 4-yard line right now, from what it looks like. So
that's better.
After a huge 21-yard run by Zach Charbonnet. So there's prime opportunity here for UCLA to get some points.
Yeah.
Let me see. I'm pretty sure there were more games, I believe. Oh, yeah, we do have some more games that are still underway. New Mexico State and San Jose State are tied at 7 apiece. UTEP is currently trailing Old Dominion 21-20. I believe that might have been off of a missed extra point.
Yep,
actually, no, it
so.
Wasn't. It wasn't, actually. It was UTEP has scored. They scored a field goal in the first quarter, two touchdowns in the second, and a field goal in the third. So, Old Dominion has just been lucky to have three touchdowns. Period. To have the slim 1-point margin. Oregon State, they have pulled ahead of Washington 17-10 currently, with about 5:28 to go in the third quarter. And it looks like they may have – oh, okay, yeah, that was a touchback. Okay. Louisiana, they did officially – this did go final. Louisiana holds on to beat South Alabama 20-18. So Louisiana improves to 4-1. And I think that is all of the games that we have – oh, actually, no. NC State, they came back to beat Louisiana Tech 34-27. So NC State improves to 4-1. Obviously, Boston College, you know, with them losing to Clemson, they now fall to 4-1. And that so far, I think, has been, well, as far as the meaningful finals. That have
right.
been announced as of now. There are – wait a minute. Where is the document I had up here? As far as the finals go, total, let's see, some of the finals that I didn't mention. Well, the notables, I should say. Memphis loses to Temple 34-31 earlier today. USC with a 37-14 victory over Colorado. Louisville with they drop a slim 3-point loss to Wake Forest 37-34. The Tennessee Volunteers with a 62-24 thrashing of the Missouri Tigers. Let's see, Ohio State 52-13 over Rutgers.
Yeah.
The Syracuse Orange I'm reading this wrong. Florida State, they finally stopped their skid with a 33-30 victory over Syracuse. However, Syracuse
yes.
covered the spread. So that's what I was reading. That Syracuse had covered the spread as opposed to actually beating the Seminoles. And that, I believe, yeah, that's most of the notable games, I believe. North Carolina, they did beat Duke earlier today, 38-7. Or no, that was that yesterday? That might have been yesterday, actually.
Yeah.
We did have yesterday Houston with a 45-10 victory over Tulsa. Obviously on Thursday, Virginia over Miami, 30-28. And yeah, that's pretty much all the notable scores so far. I do have to update, actually, once we get off the air here, I do have to update the other scores for Sports Whispers. So let's see. Some other bits of news. Veteran shooting guard J.J. Redick has officially announced his retirement from the NBA.
Yes.
After 15 productive seasons in the league. He finishes with career averages of 12.8 points, along with 2 rebounds, 2 assists per game, and 2.1 made three-pointers per game, while shooting 41.5% from downtown and 89.2% from the free throw line career. He is only one of 3 players in NBA history to make more than 2,000 career three-pointers and 2,000 free throws while shooting above 40% from downtown and above 89% from the free throw line. The only 2 other players in this club are Steph Curry and Ray Allen. I mean, talk about some elite company.
Yes,
that Curry was a part of. It's just a shame though that he never won an NBA title.
Yeah,
I believe actually. I don't think he was on. Yeah, no, he never won an NBA title. He spent his career with the Magic, the Bucks, the Clippers, the 76ers, the Pelicans, and he ended his career with the Dallas Mavericks. And then officially announced his retirement on the 21st, says here.
Right.
Although he was a member of – oh, no, never mind. That was the men's junior world championship team. He did win gold medals, though, at the world championships and global games in 2005 with the men's USA basketball under 21 team. And he did compete for a spot on the 2008 Olympic team, but he was not placed on the final roster for Team USA. According to Warriors owner Bob Myers, he has floated around a potential return time frame of January for injured star Klay Thompson, who, of course, is dealing from surgeries to his knee as well as his Achilles.
Where do you think he'll be back?
Reports... Well, it says here that they had said that there was a possible Christmas Day return. But it sounds like January. But it sounds like January is a much safer bet, from what it says.
Yeah, I was right.
Said,
I was saying on my show.
And Myers did say that Klay will be able to do a lot in training camp, but he will not be cleared for contact or 5-on-5 play. But he will still be able to, you know, get into basketball shape, basically.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
But
it kind of makes sense.
It kind of makes sense,
yes,
that they're taking it easy with him, you know, because.
Oh, sure.
Dealing with back-to-back years of injuries, you know, it's clear as day that, you know, one minor mishap and he could be. Basically, you could potentially lose him for a third straight year.
That we don't want
to
see.
If they try to rush him. No, obviously not, because
no.
The Warriors are a much different team if Thompson is also healthy, along with Draymond Green and Steph Curry. And I said this before, you know, if they can get James Wiseman, if they can develop James Wiseman into a legitimate center, you add him to the mix, and you basically almost have your big four back again in Golden State, and Golden State becomes once again a legitimate threat. So when it comes to Klay Thompson, obviously, you know, they're going to have Otto Porter Jr. and Jordan Poole relied on heavily in Thompson's absence until he's able to be actually cleared. But, you know, they say January, but honestly, I would not be surprised if he gets potentially cleared for Christmas Day, because you know that they're going to want ratings. You know, the league is going to want ratings. So I have a feeling the league could potentially, since Golden State is playing on Christmas Day, I believe, this year, they could potentially push for Golden State to try and get him cleared early.
Yeah. But I was saying that tonight earlier, when they think that he would be back, and it looks like I was right. So far.
Well, yeah, I would say if anything, Christmas Day would probably be the earliest that you could potentially expect him back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say, of course, that he will definitely be back on Christmas Day, but I would say,
right,
you know, if there was any possibility for an early return, Christmas Day would probably be the first potential date that I would look at. Oh, actually, we have a note here from Tim. According to ESPN, Penn State is the first team to start a season 5-0 after starting the previous season at 0-5 since Tennessee did it in 1989, excluding vacated losses.
I think I remember that.
So that's kind of impressive to be the first to basically turn your team around from having such a horrible, starting off the previous year on such a horrible note, and then all of a sudden you're starting off this year undefeated, but basically in reverse. Instead of 0-5, you're 5-0.
Yeah, last year was a trash year.
Yeah, it was pretty much a forgotten year for Penn State for the most part. I guess you could say, you know, obviously, you know, they had Saquon Barkley came out of Penn State, didn't he? I'm pretty sure. Let me double check, actually. Saquon Barkley.
Are you pretty sure that Tracy Morgan commercial?
Yeah, he came out of Penn State. Saquon Barkley did. So, you know, I remember Penn State being huge when Barkley was around, but, you know, they seem to have struggled in recent years. Actually, let me take a look. Let me see if they have the more recent years here. Well, actually, you know what? They haven't been that bad. Since James Franklin took over, currently in his eighth season, you know, they've been 63-28 since he took over in 2014. So, let's see. Let me take a look. 2019, they finished the 2019 season 11-2. They finished 4-5 last year. 2018, they finished 9-4. So, I mean, they haven't been that bad. They just had a down year last year, if anything. So,
yeah,
it's not really that surprising to see them come back and start off so hot this year, especially considering that last year they had finished the season by winning their last four games. So they already had that. They already had that momentum to begin with. Let's see. Also in the NBA, Rui Hachimura is out indefinitely with an excused absence from the Washington Wizards organization due to personal reasons. It does not say about the nature of his absence. It doesn't say, you know, how long he
right.
might be away, but he has been excused due to personal reasons. I wonder if it has to do with the COVID vaccine, because I know Bradley Beal is one of those players that has been against the COVID vaccine. So maybe
yes.
Hachimura might be one of those that share those same thoughts. And actually, it says here that NBA players who don't get vaccinated will not be paid for games that they miss because of COVID-19 protocols.
Yeah. Well,
which
New York
sense.
And San Francisco, that's where the protocols are the most stricter. But the Knicks are fully vaccinated with their staff and players, but Brooklyn and San Francisco are not. The thing is that Brooklyn, they only require you to take one shot, while San Francisco, you need both.
Which makes sense. You know, San Francisco, obviously being in California, you know, they've been one of the more strict,
right.
One of the more strict COVID-19 states when it comes to protocols and everything. I mean, hell, not to dive into politics here, but that's partially why Gavin Newsom won re-election.
My condolences
is because of how is because of how he's handled the COVID pandemic so far. So it's not really that shocking, you know, that
no
that they're one of the top when it comes to restrictions due to COVID. But it says here, according to the Executive Vice President of Communications, Mike Bass, for the NBA, any player who elects not to comply with local vaccination mandates will not be paid for games that he misses.
So, what do you do now?
Well, you know, there's just going to be certain, you know, certain players will have their own beliefs. I mean, Bradley Beal, you know, he refuses to get vaccinated. So, you know, it's just their decision.
Yeah, was it worth jeopardizing your career?
No, I don't think it is. But, you know, who knows? We could end up seeing some players that will just possibly sit out of seasons, potentially,
mm-hmm.
because of the fact that they don't want to get a COVID shot. And actually, the NBA has denied Andrew Wiggins' request for a religious
yes.
exemption from COVID-19 vaccination requirements. It was pretty blunt that they the press release that they sent out that said he will not be able to play in Warriors home games until he fulfills the city's vaccination requirements. And this basically buttresses a previous report from the San Francisco Chronicle that explained that the city's rules would have prevented Wiggins from playing even if he did obtain the league's exemption. And now, with his with the NBA's refusal, his status for road games could become even murkier. And it says here he has to be fully vaccinated by October 7th in order to play in the Warriors' home opener. Now, I don't know if there's been an update since, but I would assume that considering the time frame, it's probably not going to happen. So he will be unavailable more than likely for the home opener. Now, wait, it says, wait, hang on. It says they need one shot?
New York, you do.
Well,
San Francisco, you need two.
Oh, okay, San Francisco, you need two. Okay, yeah, so no,
yes.
there's no way. there's no way that he'll be able to play for the home opener.
Oh, hell no.
Michael Porter Jr., he has reportedly agreed to a 5-year max extension with the Denver Nuggets. His contract could be worth up to $207 million if he makes one of the three and all-NBA teams this season.
Yeah.
But the floor of his extension is $172 million. So regardless, he's getting paid massive amounts of dollars under this deal. Also, it says for a potential Ben Simmons deal, the Cavaliers, they are listing lottery pick Evan Mobley and Darius Garland as the two players on the Cavs roster that are untouchable in any deal for Ben Simmons. So this basically leaves Colin Sexton, Isaac Okoro, and future first-rounders as the best ammunition that the Cavs can use to potentially land Simmons. Although it does say, though, that the Cavs don't essentially have any players that are truly untouchable, but that Mobley and Garland are the closest ones to that designation. And the likelihood of either player being moved is incredibly low.
Yes.
Essentially. Now, over to baseball, because tomorrow is going to be quite the day. I'll just put it that way. Because we have potentially... Well, I shouldn't say potentially. We do have a three – actually, no. I should say potentially. We could potentially have a three-way tie for the wild card in the American League tomorrow, depending on what happens. If Boston and New York both lose but Toronto wins, we'll have a three-way tie officially. But Boston, considering they're going to be playing against a rookie, I don't know why Washington is starting. Get this. Washington is starting a player who literally his last start was his first official start in AAA. And his AA stats weren't that better at all. His AA stats kind of made me surprised that he would even be called up to begin with. So... safe to say that Boston may actually have home run derby tomorrow against the Nationals, potentially.
Okay.
So Boston will probably lock themselves in. The Yankees have to hope that either Tampa Bay will show some mercy, or that Baltimore will decide to play the actual the real life spoiler and beat Toronto somehow tomorrow.
I wasn't expecting this. I was going to think at least the Yankees would take at least one game. I thought there'd be no way at home they would lose to Tampa. So again, Tampa has been beating us. I thought, you know, after sweeping Boston last week, they would put us in the driver's seat. And now, and Toronto, well, and of course, being the Birds.
Well, you were in the driver's seat. You were in the driver's seat, though.
The hell happened?
12-2 happened.
Yeah, I know. I was hoping that was a typo.
I mean, I'm surprised. I'm surprised that New York. Well, first off, I'm surprised that Tampa Bay. You know, they would basically have their foot on the gas pedal like they are here. But I guess, you know, they're trying to stay focused. They're trying to stay in shape for a potential matchup against the New York Yankees potentially in the playoffs, or against the Boston Red Sox, so, or even against the Toronto Blue Jays. So they're trying to keep all their players in top shape and having them play to win each game, basically.
All the Yankees got to do is win, and they're in. No question.
Yeah, that's all Boston and New York have to do. You win, and you're in. Seattle... let me see. Seattle, they are 1.5 games out. Let me see what their current They're currently leading 3-1 against L.A. So, assuming they beat L.A., they will also still be in the running. So, it's possible we could potentially have a four-way tie.
Okay, so you're going to have, I guess, two one-game playoff games tomorrow, Monday, rather?
I would assume.
Yes.
That might be how they do things.
But if Boston and Toronto win and the Yankees lose, they're out.
Yeah, the Yankees, well, I don't know, though, because the season, I don't think they go by the season. Do they go by the season?
Yeah,
series?
I believe they do.
And New York lost the season series to Toronto?
I think so. I think Anthony might come down to percentage points.
It might, yeah. Well, I don't know because you know they're 91-7. They would be 91-71 if the
yeah.
Yankees lose tomorrow and Toronto loses. Both teams or outright and Toronto wins. Both teams would be 91-71. So it wouldn't be off a percentage. It would probably be off of the season series potentially. Then obviously if the season series was tied, then they would go to, I think, the run differential, which in that case, Toronto has New York beat by a mile.
Yeah.
Now, Seattle, on the other hand, I mean, they lost last night to L.A., so it's entirely possible. L.A. has three more innings, so, you know, it's possible a two-run deficit, L.A. could potentially come back. We could see Seattle get eliminated tonight, possibly.
Right.
But Boston, it says they've at the least, Boston has clinched a tie, essentially,
right,
for the wild card.
Yuck.
So, at the worst, they would have to play. Just to get the chance to play a wild card game. So we would see game 163 basically, if Boston ends up losing tomorrow. However, if Boston wins, then they clinch the number one spot, and they would host. They would host the wild card game in Fenway. But the American League division leaders, Tampa Bay obviously represents the East, Houston represents the West officially, and Chicago represents the Central. All other teams except Boston, New York, Toronto, and Seattle have been eliminated. In the National League, you got San Francisco, Milwaukee, and Atlanta as your division winners, with L.A., and St. Louis occupying the wild card spots, and all other teams have been eliminated officially.
Who would have thought the Mets would be eliminated when they had such a hot start?
Yeah, you know, but the season changes quickly, so it's kind of amazing too, considering the talent that the Mets have, and they just can't, for some reason, they can't put things together. And especially with the golden opportunity they had, with Atlanta, you know, Atlanta losing their star center fielder for a majority of the season. But then again, like I've said previously, nobody expected that Atlanta would thrive instead of suffer from losing their star center fielder.
When Acuna went down, I'm like, okay, that's it. Their season's done. Think again.
Yeah. Instead, they clinched the NL East, and they're officially headed to the playoffs. Now, with LA versus with L.A. versus St. Louis, I'm pretty much going to say that L.A. is going to advance, period, regardless. So, I mean, they lead St. Louis by 14 and a half games in the wild card. So, you know, it's – and the run differential is 257 to 35. It's not going to be – you could almost consider – you could almost crown L.A. as the official wild card representatives for the National League. American League, it'll get interesting because depending on when the wild card game is, I don't think they will have if it's Boston and New York, I don't think New York will have to face Chris Sale because Sale is supposed to pitch tomorrow's game, which basically will put him out of the running for a wild card for the wild card game. They may face Tanner Houck possibly though, because Tanner Houck, even though he pit, you know what, that's another thing. I have to bring this up, even though, you know, Tanner Houck, he had previously pitched 3 days ago, so he was pitching on 3 days rest today. He had been through five innings, 53 pitches, pitching a perfect game. No hits, no walks, no errors, no hit batsmen. He was pitching a perfect game. He had eight strikeouts, and Alex Cora decides to pull him from the game. Despite, even though I understand he had pitched 3 days earlier, but it makes absolutely no sense. If you have a guy pitching a perfect game, why not just go through with it until he either walks somebody or he gives up a hit? Especially when you have a slim 1-0 lead like they did. I mean, at this point, I'm kind of wondering, is Alex Cora ever going to let him pitch more than five innings?
That I don't know.
Because it's been like this pretty much the entire year, where every single time it would be a very promising start for the young guy, you know, instead it would basically be like, okay, we're going to take you out after say 4 2/3 innings or after four innings, and we're going to put somebody else to completely fuck up the game and make us lose. And I mean, he has a 3 ERA, which is like one of the lowest ERAs among all of Red Sox starters this year. And yet, out of all the games he's played, he's only won one game, mainly because of the fact that they just won't let him, you know, they just won't let him play, period. They won't let him go further. And believe it or not, Boston almost did lose today's game. I mean, they gave up a bases loaded sacrifice fly in the eighth inning. Now, had they not scored four runs in the top of the ninth inning, probably would have been walked off by Washington in the bottom half, when they gave up the two-run shot. So Boston's extremely lucky that they were able to have scored four runs off of Rainey in relief today. But some scores from around the league. Currently in the top of the seventh, the Mariners hold on to a 3-1 lead over the LA Angels. In the bottom of the eighth in LA, the Dodgers with an 8-1 lead over the Milwaukee Brewers. Finals from earlier today, Tampa Bay over New York 12-2. Toronto over Baltimore 10-1. Red Sox barely over the Nationals 5-3. The Padres beat the Giants 3-2 in 10 innings. Marlins over the Phillies, 3-1. The Pirates over the Reds, 8-6. Texas over the Indians, 7-2. The Astros over the Athletics, 10-4. Twins blank the Royals, 4-0. The White Sox edge out the Tigers, 5-4. The Cubs, 6-5 over the Cardinals. The Braves over the Mets, 6-5 as well. And the Diamondbacks over the Rockies, 11-2. So, I mean, regardless, you know, tomorrow's matchup, really the one matchup I think that a lot of people are going to be, or the three matchups, I should say, that everybody's going to be watching are Boston and Washington, Yankees and Rays, and Blue Jays and Orioles. And depending on if Seattle, wins tonight, maybe they'll also be looking at Seattle and LA. Because pretty much that's the only race that is yet to be settled is the American League wild card. But as far as potential starters, the Red Sox have Chris Sale going up against against the 22nd best prospect in the Washington Nationals organization, Joan Adon, who literally just made his first AAA start a couple of days ago. Tampa Bay, they have Michael Wacha going out to the mound against Jameson Taillon of the New York Yankees. So that might be good news for New York, considering between the two pitchers, Taillon's probably the better pitcher. And for Toronto, they got Hyunjin Ryu going up against Bruce Zimmerman for the Orioles.
Yes.
And for the Mariners, they have Tyler Anderson matching up against Reed Detmers. So those are pretty much, you know, the big game matchups to pay attention to tomorrow, considering, I mean, let's face it, everybody else, you know, they may just rest some of their players for those who already have their positions locked in. And obviously, you know, there may be just some that decide they want to play spoiler. So, who knows? It's possible.
Yeah, well, it comes down to tomorrow. How about that?
Some college updates. At the end of three quarters, LSU with a 9-point lead over Auburn, 19-10. UCLA and Arizona State are tied in the second quarter with about 8.5 minutes to go, 17 apiece. Hawaii currently holds a 3-point lead over Fresno State, 10-7. Where is that other game I was just looking at? Michigan State, that has gone final. Michigan State, 48-31 victory over Western Kentucky. So they improved to 5-0. And Oklahoma State did officially topple Baylor, 24-14. And I think that might – wait, let me check the FBS. Washington, they have come back to take the lead over Oregon State, 24-17. That is with about 10 minutes to go in the game. And, yeah, that's pretty much it for college right now. There's still I mean, there's a couple of other games, but the other games aren't really – ones to watch for. San Jose State and New Mexico State, it's 24-14 at the half for San Jose State.
Right.
There. But let's see, some NHL scores around the league here. Granted, it's preseason. The Seattle Kraken, you know, so far they've had a pretty successful preseason. However, They are currently trailing 3-1 to the Calgary Flames. This has gone final. The New Jersey Devils, they stay perfect in the preseason with a 2-1 victory over the New York Islanders in overtime. The Arizona Coyotes with a 4-3 victory over the Anaheim Ducks. The Edmonton Oilers 4-3 over the Winnipeg Jets. The Philadelphia Flyers with a 3-1 victory over the Washington Capitals. Capitals haven't even won a preseason game yet so far. The Senators drop a 2-1 decision to the Montreal Canadiens. The Red Wings with a 5-1 win over the Columbus Blue Jackets. The New York Rangers with a 4-3 victory in overtime thanks to an Alexis Lafreniere open net goal against the Boston
Bruins
because Linus Ullmark apparently does not know how to play the puck, especially when he literally has it in front of the net. The Nashville Predators with a – I mean, yeah, granted it is preseason, but, I mean, he made a pretty stupid decision. You know, he held his stick on the puck for God knows how long, and he couldn't decide who to pass it to.
Right.
Then when he finally decides to pass it, a charging Alexis Lafreniere steals the puck before it even gets to Ullmark's target. And – I mean, it was pretty much as wide of an open net as could be, essentially. And Lafreniere just buried it. The Nashville Predators, they beat the Tampa Bay Lightning 6-1. And the Chicago Blackhawks, they beat the St. Louis Blues by a score of 5-1. So that is how the NHL stacks up.
Cool.
Let's see. Did we have any games in Major League Soccer?
Yes, we did.
Maybe? Yes, we did, actually. Currently, in the 82nd minute, Vancouver holds a 3-0 lead over San Jose, so that will become final at some point. The New York Red Bulls with a 1-0 victory over Cincinnati FC. Orlando City with a 2-1 victory over DC United. Dallas and Minnesota played to a tie, a scoreless tie, actually. Montreal with a 2-1 victory over Atlanta. And I think this was Austin, Texas. Yeah, Austin FC with a 2-1 victory over Real Salt Lake. Oh, wait a minute. When is – okay, so there are games tomorrow for soccer. They got NYCFC against Nashville. You got Philly against Columbus. Houston against Sporting Kansas City. Toronto against Chicago. Portland against Miami. L.A. against LAFC. And Seattle against Colorado. So, yeah, wow. The New England Revolution must not play for quite some time.
Yeah.
Because I do not see... Yeah, I don't see them listed. Huh. Wait a minute. Let me check. So, they do have games tomorrow. Then the next... October 9th, October 10th. Okay, it says their next game for New England Revolution is on the 16th. So they have 2 weeks off, basically. And then they play on the 20th, which I believe the MLS Cup, I think, begins in November. I want to say.
Just a little bit of leap.
Yeah. Well, anyways, that's probably going to wrap it up for us tonight.
All right.
We will be back. We will be back next week for another edition of the Sports Whispers Weekly podcast, brought to you by Missy AE and the Missy AE podcast, and also by the Whispers groups that you can join by going to Facebook and searching for either Survivor, Big Brother, or Sports Whispers, and you can basically chat with any Survivor, Big Brother, or sports fans, as well as get access to all of our other podcasts that we have done by going to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE or by subscribing on iTunes or Amazon Music by searching Missy AE. And you'll get access to all the shows that we have done, as well as any that will be coming up. But anyways, Lou, thank you for joining me tonight. Everybody have a good rest of your weekend, and we will see you guys next Saturday night.